I will now pass it over to Jennifer Hanna, who will open today's call.
Thank you, Megan. And good afternoon, everyone, and happy Valentine's Day. So thank you all for joining us today. My name is Jennifer Hanna. I am the Director of the Office of Healthcare Readiness. Before we hand it over to our first presenter, I would like to provide a brief overview of our agenda for today. Next slide, please. First, Rachel Lehman, the Acting Director of ASPR Tracy, will provide an overview of ASPR Tracy's winter weather resources. Next, Dave Cernak, Richard Hunt, and I will provide a few Office of Healthcare Readiness updates. Afterwards, Dr. Cullen Clark and Dr. Brent Kazany, representatives from ASPR's Pediatric Disaster Care Centers of Excellence, will provide an update on the respiratory season 2023 through 2024. Finally, we will have some time at the end of our program for questions from the audience. Next slide, please. I will now pass it over to Rachel Lehman for our first presentation. Rachel?
Thank you so much, Jennifer. And I will just start by saying it is always such a privilege to be able to present on HPP recipient webinars. And I'm excited to remind folks of our winter weather resources and to highlight some of our recently released and upcoming products. So next slide. Okay, so it is my understanding that on Groundhog's Day, the groundhog did not see a shadow, which means we are in for an early spring, but the East Coast has been managing a nor'easter. It is only mid-February, and I can say as a Minnesotan, I'm very comfortable saying there's still plenty of time for severe cold weather and winter storms. Our natural disasters topic collection has both lessons learned and plans, tools, and template resources focused on managing extreme cold. And we also developed a couple of resources focused on lessons learned from Winter Storm Uri in 2021. Those can be found in the natural disasters topic collection, as well as our utility failures topic collection. And on the note of utility failures, in fall 2023, ASPR Tracy released the Utility Failures in Healthcare Toolkit, which includes 5 tip sheets offering general and specific planning considerations for healthcare facilities faced with failures affecting electricity, fuel, oxygen, telecommunications and information technology, and water. And the toolkit also features links to all the work we've done on utility failures this last year. I mean, utility failures have been a concentration for ASPR Tracy because they pose a serious threat to healthcare operations across the country, and they're becoming more frequent due to aging infrastructure and an increase in extreme weather events, including winter storms and extreme cold. And then lastly, just please take a look at our climate change resilience and healthcare system considerations resource. It does include information on extreme cold and winter storms. It also outlines the impacts of climate-related illness and injury on health system operations, care delivery, and patient surge. It includes information on bolstering healthcare infrastructure resilience and facility hardening. And it's just all around a really great resource. So next slide. So ASPR Tracy was busy in late 2023, and we continue to be busy in 2024. And these are some of our new and updated resources. The ASPR Tracy 2023 Year in Review report summarizes our work during calendar year 2023 and includes links to all our resources developed during that time. It also highlights one of my favorite ongoing projects, which is ASPR Tracy's work to make our COVID-19 specific resources applicable to other hazards. Much like everyone across healthcare and public health, COVID-19 dominated the work we did for 3.5+ years, and we developed well over 100 COVID-specific resources. And our project to update these resources is helping us document lessons learned from COVID-19 and ensure that these really great resources are applicable to other hazards. And one of the notable products that we updated this last year as a part of this project is the Healthcare Provider Shortages, Resources, and Strategies for Meeting Demand product. It was originally developed to help healthcare facilities address staffing shortages during the pandemic, but workforce shortages are still a massive issue, and the resource has been updated to be applicable to all hazards. Then we also, in late 2023, we held 2 webinars. We had the Health Industry Distributors Association. They were kind enough to feature ASPR Tracy in the HIDA ASPR Educational Webinar Series, which is the Determining Hospital Supply Needs and Likely Usage During an Incident webinar. We highlight our supply chain resources, including the Disaster Available Supplies and Hospitals tool. And Nebraska Medicine was kind enough to join us for this webinar and discuss their experiences using the hospital pharmacy module of the DASH tool. The second webinar we had is Lessons Learned from the Signature Healthcare Brockton Hospital Fire. And this may go down as one of the most popular webinars that Asper Tracy ever held. It sold out in less than 24 hours. And in a very short time after we released the recording of the webinar, it had been viewed over 7,000 times. And the focus of this webinar is on February 7th, 2023, a 10-alarm fire at Signature Healthcare Brockton Hospital in Massachusetts resulted in a total evacuation of the hospital, continued closure, and extensive recovery efforts. Our webinar featured hospital representatives sharing their experience navigating a complete utility failure during a fire emergency, and they discussed their successes and challenges with patient movement, transfers, and discharge, managing patient and staff safety, and managing cascading events. And this hour-long webinar was not nearly enough time for the amazing speakers from Signature Healthcare, so we are working with them to develop a complimentary written product to that webinar. Next, so early this year, we released our updated EHR topic collection. And for anyone historically familiar with this topic collection, you'll notice that we added downtime procedures to the name of the topic collection. There's a really big demand for downtime guidance and lessons learned, and this is a great collection of the best in show downtime resources. And of course, the topic collection also has guidance and lessons learned specific to EHR. In late 2023, we released issue 18 of The Exchange, and it focused on innovations in healthcare surge capacity management. There were two fantastic articles focused on MOCs. One discussed how the Washington Medical Coordination Center adapted their operations to manage the 2022 pediatric surge. And the other looks at the evolution of patient load balancing in Texas. And Texas has been a leader in patient load balancing since the 1990s. And the article looks at how daily systems for transfer management and just how they are adapted for disasters and PHEs. And the remaining articles focus on expanding capacity in rural healthcare environments. We met with California EMS authority officials to discuss how in Imperial County, the augmented capacity and accommodated patient surge through a multi-pronged approach, which included alternate care sites. And then we also met with our IHS colleagues working at the Gallup Indian Medical Center to document their lessons learned in patient transfer in an environment that we're struggling with a wide variety of challenges, including no available beds in the region at times. But overall, it is a great issue full of lessons learned from COVID-19, and we are excited to have the Office of Healthcare Readiness's very own Jennifer Hanna author the foreword for that issue. And then lastly, I'm very excited to highlight our brand new hospital mass casualty response plan considerations. And the considerations in this document can assist hospitals with developing new or vetting an existing MCI plan. To be noted, the scope of the document is primarily focused on the first hour of a response, though in some cases considerations are longer term. And it includes 11 sections ranging from alerting and mobilization to emergency department command and control, to integration and coordination with other hospitals, healthcare coalitions, and emergency management. Next slide. For upcoming products, we are updating our mass distribution and dispensing of medical countermeasures topic collection and our blood and blood products topic collection. Both will be available this spring. We're also in the process of developing some additional appendices for the MOC toolkit. The first appendix we are developing will focus on pediatric considerations for MOCs. And we're also updating the name of the toolkit from the Medical Operation Coordination Cells Toolkit to the Medical Operation Coordination Centers Toolkit. A small but very impactful update. Next, we are working on a hospital resource allocation annex template. This will be featured in our next edition of the Express, so keep an eye for that. And then if any of you are attending the Association of Healthcare Emergency Preparedness Professionals Annual Conference or NACHO's Preparedness Summit, come say hi to the Asper Tracy team. We will be at both, and we're very excited and honored to be presenting at both. And with that, just say, yeah, thank you for what you all do every day. And always please remember to utilize our TA Center. We are here to help you. And generally, do not hesitate to reach out. We love to hear from you, and we love to work with you. So just please reach out, web form, call us our toll-free number, or email Ask Asper Tracy. And next slide. Yeah, I'm happy to take any questions if anyone has any. Alicia.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to say thank you for the two-day workshop last week for disaster medical leadership. I know that it came at the very end of the second day that the recordings weren't going to be released, but that there may be some potential opportunity for individual sessions to be released. And I'm hoping that it's possible to reconsider that and release anything that you can, because I think there was a lot to be learned through many of those sessions, and many of us didn't get to attend all of them. So just a plea for a reconsideration, especially if the speakers are comfortable with having their session released. Thanks.
No, thank you. And yeah, thank you for tuning in. We're really excited about how the first ever Medical Leadership and Disaster Preparedness Response virtual conference went. So we are not planning on posting the recordings on the Asper Tracy website, but if you are interested in different sessions, feel free to reach out to me. And I'm also considering kind of putting together kind of a written summary of key points on that came up throughout the conference and the different sessions as well. But yeah, feel free to reach out to Ask Asper Tracy if you have questions about recordings. And again, thank you for the support. We're so excited about how the virtual conference went. So thank you. Thank you for the question.
And Rachel, it looks like we also got a question in the chat asking about the materials that you'll provide. I think you kind of already answered that one, but I just wanted to flag that.
Oh, I'm sorry. My chat. I'm actually not seeing that one. I do apologize. But yeah, I can throw the materials that I mentioned in the chat. And yeah, thank you so much.
Rachel, the question was regarding the materials from last week's conference.
Oh, so the materials that were thrown in the chat for the conference. Okay, so we can maybe put together links that were shared and probably share those widely, because I know we still have the info from the chat from the virtual conference. So we will gather all those materials and share widely, because I know there was fantastic resources mentioned throughout the 2 days. So thank you for that flag, and sorry that I'm having some technical issues.
Great. Thank you, Rachel. Please just a reminder, if you have any other questions for Rachel, please ask those questions. As she said, as we said, you can drop those in the chat, you can put them in the Q&A, or you can raise your hand and you can ask the question live.
If you think of anything later, you can also just email Ask Asper Tracy.
Right. Thank you, Rachel. And also, you know, just a point, and I know that the DPHP has probably heard the same thing from me yesterday, but interestingly enough, regarding the groundhog not seeing his shadow, he's only been right 3 out of the last 10 out of the last 10 times over the past decade. So, you know, sometimes he gets it right, and sounds like most times he gets it wrong. But Rachel, thank you and the ASPR team for everything that you do, for putting together such comprehensive and relevant materials. We know that you've been a great support as well for the Office of Healthcare Readiness, and consider you to be an incredible, incredible partner. So thank you. And thank you for your willingness to always join us on these calls. So next slide, please. And now we'll pass it to Dr. Richard Hunt to begin our Office of Healthcare Readiness updates. Dr. Hunt.
Yeah, thanks, Jennifer. So I'm doing the updates, huh? Okay. All right. So a couple of updates. One on clinical rounds, which we relaunched last week, and also a really quick update on monkeypox as well. Next slide, please. I'm Senior Medical Advisor for the Office of Healthcare Readiness, and it's an honor to work with my colleagues in that office for sure. Some of you might remember, between 2020, actually it was March 2020 and February 2022, our Office of Healthcare Readiness launched HHS ASPR Project ECHO COVID-19 clinical rounds. using the Project Echo telemetering platform. During that period of time, we hosted 198 total ASPR Project Echo sessions with over 75,000 cumulative participants from over 100 countries. The COVID-19 clinical rounds discussed patient care and clinical operations challenges and successes, and it evolved over time to become a critical support system for clinicians. Based on that experience, our Office of Healthcare Readiness is launching, actually we launched last week on last Tuesday, a new series of clinical rounds. This new series is different in that it will focus on steady state, blue sky, as it were, preparedness for all hazards, all threats, and in support of the healthcare workforce. The new HHS Project Echo clinical readiness rounds will facilitate peer-to-peer, real-time sharing of clinical challenges and successes in preparing for and responding to disasters from all threats, with a focus on patient care, clinical operations, and support for the healthcare workforce. You'll see on the slide, these occur every other Tuesday, US noon Eastern time. The next one will be February 20th, and then it's a every other 2 week cycle, March 5th, March 19th. You'll see examples of topics. Don't hold me to the topics in terms of which date the topics are, but these are the kinds of topics that we're talking about and thinking about and moving forward. Filling gaps in the EMS workforce, decrowding emergency departments, and how to save lives with medical operations coordination centers. And certainly sessions focused on being in support of the healthcare workforce. The clinical readiness rounds occur on a biweekly basis, as I mentioned. In addition to the clinical readiness rounds steady state, as it were, we have the capacity to quickly pivot and stand up clinical readiness rounds, emergency sessions within 72 hours of the time a need is identified following an emergency event. As a frame of reference for that one, Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response during the pandemic asked me if I could do a rounds on ventilation management within 24 hours. I think it happened about 36 hours after the request because I couldn't get the speaker to speak fast enough. So we have the capability, the capacity to do it. And sort of an example of the kind of thing that we might do, for example, if widespread wildfires broke across out across the West or an earthquake occurred, we could launch clinical readiness rounds very, very specific to that disaster in a way that could crowdsource prior experiences to help those in response, but also have those in response share their experience to help all of us. Our intent is that the clinical readiness round sessions will be able to count for continuing medical education or continuing nursing education. We are working very hard and recognize we have a gap in being able to provide EMS, continuing education, and we're working toward that as well. The first session occurred last Tuesday, share with you a couple of take-homes. We were surprised that about 50% of the respondents had never participated in rounds before. Like the previous rounds, the COVID rounds, we had a very wide range of disciplines, which actually is one of the unintended positive consequences of this, where you have, for example, an EMT talking to a intensive care unit physician from Massachusetts General. We had almost every state participate in that one, and also two countries had representatives. A couple of highlights in terms of the polling that we do on, in each session. Certainly the nursing and EMS shortage was highlighted, and also it was fascinating to see the number that had concerns about misinformation and disinformation. I'm not sure I'm surprised by it, but it was pretty striking to see that. In general, I didn't see one take home that said, this is the problem we all need to attack right now. It was really pretty much across the board in concerns. The next session will be next Tuesday, February 20th. understand that topics really are going to evolve based on what we hear from the participants, and it'll evolve pretty quickly, and also dependent, obviously, on being able to have speakers attend on a particular session. To make sure you're in the loop for these, if you wish, I actually encourage you all to subscribe to the Healthcare Readiness Bulletin. I'm sure all of you probably do already, where the registration information and other important announcements about the clinical realms will be posted. I think a member of our team is going to share the link for subscribing in the chat. And even if you don't have an interest, you can certainly forward it on to those that might have an interest. Kind of the next slide, please. Monkeypox. Many of you have been very involved with monkeypox preparedness over the past months, and just an update on where that is in consultation with CDC. And also, we continue to have discussions with NITEC on monkeypox and their role as coordinating body for the National Special Pathogen System. Some messages that you can certainly find on the CDC's website about monkeypox, but I'll just echo those as well. Certainly continue to encourage vaccination of those at current risk for monkeypox. We haven't gotten to the people who need it or to a lot of those people. Certainly review state and local jurisdiction Category A waste management requirements. Category A waste management is a real challenge for all of us. So it would behoove all of us to like be as current as we can on what that would look like. And then prepare and review your state local response plan for monkeypox. Many of you already have had those experiences, but just, you know, be updated on those. And then quickly alert CDC if you have heard of monkeypox symptoms in a traveler from the DRC. And also alert the CDC for clusters of unusually severe infections or clusters in persons without usual risk factors. With that, I think those are, I see the question. I'll respond to that really quickly. Updates on the status of the clade 1 monkeypox virus in the DRC. Yeah, literally, I spoke with CDC yesterday about the DRC, and you know, we all, I get pinged on that question. I ask that question frequently. I don't have an answer to it, and with the exception of sort of like the caveat, it is really, really difficult in the DRC to get the numbers, do the contact tracing, do the real epidemiology and identification of patients that may or already do have monkeypox. And that's really been hindering the ability to say, oh, the numbers have increased or decreased by X percent this week. So I wish I had an absolute answer for you, but I don't, and it's hindered by that ability. So I don't know if at this point, that ends my updates. Thanks for your time today. If there are any other questions, I guess I'll see them in the chat, or maybe later there might be questions as well. Glad to answer. At this point, I'm going to pass it over to Dave Cernak to share a few additional updates. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Dr. Hunt, and good morning, everyone, or good afternoon. My name is Dave Cernak, and I'm an acting regional supervisor within the Office of Healthcare Readiness. So today, I'm going to start by sharing a few Hospital Preparedness Program, or HPP, recipient level updates. So first on my list is an update on no-cost extensions. So just to make sure that we're all on the same page, this being the fifth year in the current cooperative agreement, we will not be able to carry over funds into the next budget period. Instead, this being the final year, what we do have the option for, and we're going to be, it will absolutely be available, is the option for a no-cost extension. So this will allow you to finalize and complete any existing work and spend down any existing funding in your budgets for up to an additional 12 months beyond the end of the project period, as long as you apply in time and get all that, get the administration administrative approval done before June 30th. So if you have additional questions, please reach out to your project officers and your assigned grants management specialist on how to submit for that no-cost extension, because the option will be available for all recipients at the end of this year. Next, I'd like to just remind everybody again about the CPG module within Performs. Over the past several years, we have been annually requiring completion of the CPG module in the early springtime in preparation for the upcoming budget period. As we begin to transition into a new five-year cooperative agreement and begin to transition away from usage of the current Performs platform, we are no longer going to be requiring completion of the CPG module. So this year, there is no requirement to complete the CPG module in Performs. So rather, we would encourage you to take this time to review your programs, review your current capabilities, assess priorities within your jurisdictions, and start preparing yourselves, your programs, your coalitions, and your partners to make that transition into the next five-year cooperative agreement. Next is, again, a little bit based on some historic work done in Performs, and that is the mid-year reporting that has been traditionally tied to the application module in Performs. Again, since we're not using Performs moving forward, we won't be using that application module in Performs. Therefore, there won't be a mid-year reporting module to complete. So instead, we've encouraged our project officers to reach out to all the recipients and start to have these mid-year conversations, start to conduct a mid-year review and an update with your project officer, with your internal teams to assess where you currently stand within the current BP5 work plan and budget to ensure that you're on track, and also to prepare your work plans and budget for that eventual closeout or potential no-cost extension application. So if you have not yet had the opportunity to have that discussion with your project officer, I encourage you to bring that up during your next monthly update and sit down and just do a quick walkthrough of your work plan and your budget to make sure everyone is aware of the current status of both as you, again, prepare to end BP5 and close out this current budget period. And last but not least, a quick update on the Medical Response and Surge Exercise, or MRSE, recipient review guide. As you may have seen in the last few weekly ASPR healthcare readiness bulletins, over the past several months, the MRSE support team has been compiling the BP3 and BP4 MRSE information that has been uploaded into the Coalition Assessment Tool, or CAT. So during this review, we noted that quite a few exercise tools were either submitted incomplete or just simply unavailable in the CAT. Our project officers were able to follow up with these healthcare coalitions, or HCCs, and successfully resolve the majority of these data discrepancies. But to reduce the possibility of a similar situation occurring again in BP5, the MRSE support team has put together a MRSE recipient review guide for your use. The intent of this guide is to assist HPP recipients, yourselves, with conducting a systematic review of each funded HCC MRSE exercise planning and evaluation tool, or simply the MRSE exercise tool, prior to its final submission. So the recipient review guide will focus on the identification of any missing, inaccurate, or insufficient data that is required within each section of the MRSE exercise tool. The annual completion of the MRSE is a benchmark, right? So recipients are responsible for verifying that the tool does meet the basic requirements of completeness for submission to ASPR. So the recipient review guide will also provide assurance that the HCC's exercise plan is in alignment with the recipient's strategic priorities and goals, and the results of the exercise effectively evaluate the current level of healthcare readiness for the HCC based on the scenario that they selected. So once your review is complete, we encourage you to retain a copy from each of your healthcare coalitions and then submit that copy with your final end of year reporting. So we've requested the MRSE recipient review guide be made available to all recipients and healthcare coalitions alongside the current MRSE documents on the ASPR website. This process is currently underway, and we will update everyone as soon as that review guide is available on the website. Some additional reminders. The past several months, the MRSE support team has been, again, reviewing And recipients must verify annually that their coalitions have properly submitted their final mercy exercise tools into the CAT within 90 days of completion. So we are a little over halfway through BP5. So I'm hoping that those conversations are continuing to take place and you're continuing to monitor each of your coalitions to ensure that they're on track with their planning and execution and evaluation schedule for their annual mercy requirement. And they get that completed and submitted to you for review and then uploaded into the CAT within 90 days of execution. Finally, the exercise tool, the mercy exercise tool, should remain in the CAT and should not be removed at the end of the performance year. This way, that tool can be there and be available for data collection and data review in an ongoing basis moving forward, right? That was some of the issues that we saw is that as coalitions transitioned from BP3 to BP4 to BP5, some coalitions had removed the tool to prepare for uploading the following year. We ask that they just keep the Mercy tool uploaded in the CAT and leave it there permanently. So I will pause here for any questions, but I think I've seen some in the CAT in the chat, and for a whole bunch. Okay, first one. So no cost extension due date. So ASPR Grants Management has not set an official due date. Recommendation is to try and get those applications in by around that 90-day mark, right? Because it does take some time to review and process. But I would reach out and speak with directly with your project officer and your grants management specialist. Probably that 60 to 90 day is probably your ideal target to make sure that if there is any questions or any requests for additional supporting documentation or any changes that need to be made, those actions can be taken prior to final approval before the end of the budget period. Okay, I'm gonna pause. I see the one about the NOFO release, but I think that one is going to be covered by Jennifer, and I have a bad habit of stealing her thunder. I don't want to do that during this call. And the updates, yes, we'll make sure that we include some more of these additional updates that I've reviewed today in next week's bulletin. As far as future replacement for the performs, we are currently in a process of evaluating multiple platforms, so we have not officially decided on which IT platform is going to be utilized. But we are reviewing several options as well as system requirements. So that's something we're going to continue to update on as we move forward in that selection process. And will we be using performs to submit the new BP? No, we will not be using performs for any component of the next five-year cooperative agreement. Performs will stay in place for now in order to close out this year, submit your end-of-year reports, just like we have done for the previous budget periods. But the work that will be done, any work that will be done in performs right now will only pertain to this current project, five-year project period. For the next five-year cooperative agreement and project period, we will not be utilizing performs. And let me see, no cost extension only for BP5 or can it include? So the no cost extension is the administrative request to utilize funds to complete existing work in the current budget period. So if you have any additional funds remaining from BPs 1 through 4, you need to get a carryover request submitted as soon as possible to get those funds moved over to BP5, have your BP5 budget updated appropriately, have your work plan updated accordingly to include the new work that the funding is going to support. And then if you do need to submit a no-cost extension, it will apply to exactly what is in that current BP5 work plan and budget. And a clean copy of the Mercy tool placed on the website. Yes, we can make sure there, I believe, should be, oh, I'm sorry, the tool. The issue we currently have with the tool on the website comes back to 508 compliance. If you do need a copy of the tool, you can reach out to your project officer and we can email you a copy directly. But right now, because of 508 compliance restrictions, we have some issues with currently uploading the tool. This is something we're trying to come up with a better solution for the next five-year cooperative agreement. But if you do need a copy of the tool, we're happy to send it to you. And will we still be able to access the information we haven't performed historically? Yes, we're currently working on a way to be able to download and extract the information in performs. So we will be providing instructions and information on how to pull all that historic information out of PERFORMS, so you'll have it for your records moving forward. And do we need to do, oh, same thing. Do we need to download the information out of PERFORMS? Yep, we're gonna work on getting those instructions out to everyone so you know how to download that information. As far as what the platform that FEP is using,
yeah, Dave, you can pause and hold.
There
that.
We go.
Hold those. Sorry, there's a lot of questions.
Sure. All right. At this point, I will turn it back over to you, Jennifer, and we can pick any more up directly in the chat. Thank you so much. I appreciate everyone's input. So you have a great day. Back to you, Jennifer.
Thanks, Dave. I really appreciate that. And just for the questions that people are asking about PERFORMS, we will not be using PERFORMS. Also, we will not be using ReadyCamp. FEP will be using ReadyCamp. So we will not be using that system for the applications for our new notice of funding opportunity. We will not be collecting or requesting you to submit your applications via an IT system. You will be submitting your applications in Grant Solutions. You know, typically when you do your applications in PERFORMS, you download the reports and then you upload them into Grant Solutions. So we are only using Grant Solutions. Some more information will be forthcoming regarding any templates, any specific instructions, which will be included within the notice of funding opportunity regarding the application for year one of our new notice of funding opportunity. So if we could go to the next slide, please. And then we will return back to your questions, folks, but thank you. Next slide, please. Oops, I'm sorry, go back to the other slide. Can we go back? Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Just a very quick update. I know that everyone is wondering where we are with the National Healthcare Preparedness and Response Capabilities, also known as our capabilities. If you attended the National Healthcare Coalition Preparedness Conference, we provide you with a little bit of update regarding that as well. But the new capabilities are going to provide strategic guidance for healthcare to save lives and maintain function in advance of enduring and after a response. The capabilities are still being finalized for clearance and will be released in the near future. Also, as you already know, we certainly thank all of you for your feedback and your collaboration for developing this new set of capabilities. So, more to come on regarding the capabilities. We hope that they will be released very soon once we get through the clearance process. Next slide, please. And let's go ahead and go to the next slide, please. So just wanted to provide a few updates regarding the FY 2024-2028 HPP Notice of Funding Opportunity. We are currently developing, as you know, a new Notice of Funding Opportunity for the next five-year project period. And tentatively, we anticipate that Notice of Funding Opportunity will be released in March. I know I saw a question earlier about why was it being released so late? We are also a part of this NOFO 100 or Notice of Funding Opportunity 100 Simpler Grants activity or pilot project. And in order for us to be a part of that project, which will result in a much more streamlined, less onerous application guidance, is that we had to delay the release of our Notice of Funding Opportunity. So tentatively in March, you'll still have 60 days in order to respond to that. We know that also at the same time that many folks will be at the preparedness summit, and we're going to be looking to see how we might be able to adjust the application period for when people are attending that conference. So more information related to that. Next slide, please. So as we stated as well, as you can see on the screen, we had, I'm sorry, that was our other slide. So this is this slide, forgive me. This is just taking a look at our outcomes. So for the next notice of funding opportunity, we really are looking for developing more of a streamlined, results-driven notice of funding opportunity. And we are working to define outcomes for this cooperative agreement, which capture how it will strengthen the healthcare delivery system in the next project period. The outcomes capture how the HPP cooperative agreement will strengthen the healthcare delivery system in the next project period. They clarify the impacts of the activities and deliverables that will be included in the notice of funding opportunity, and more specifically defined outcomes, which are to communicate objectives of the HPP funding for recipients and subrecipients, guide how Office of Healthcare Readiness develops cooperative agreement requirements and activities for recipients, subrecipients, and healthcare coalition members, and finally, to support the Office of Healthcare Readiness in measuring HPP's impact on healthcare readiness response and recovery. The draft HPP NOFO outcome theme areas are establishing and acting upon multi-year priorities. And that's really just looking across the full 5 years of the project period. What are the priorities? What things should be assessed? What things, how should you plan? And should you focus on that five-year planning or multi-year planning? This next draft outcome is on enhancing and sustaining our healthcare coalitions. We know that we can't continue to do work the way that we've been doing it in the past. You know, I kind of define things sometimes as pre-COVID and post-COVID. How now should our healthcare coalitions look and feel? What's the role of them, and how should we be enhancing and sustaining them? And then the third outcome theme is around coordination, which is around coordinated planning and decision-making among healthcare delivery system partners, but also looking at that connectivity and that coordination amongst recipients, healthcare coalitions members, and as well as some of our other ASPR programs, and as well as our interagency programs. And then finally, one of the other high-level outcomes is looking at continuity of healthcare service delivery. So through the HPP NOFO activities, you and your healthcare coalitions will advance these outcomes in the next project period. And as I said, these are currently draft outcomes, certainly subject to change. Next slide, please. So in the notice of funding opportunity, we are working to identify what we're calling core functions, or what is expected of every recipient and healthcare coalition to enable them to meet the community needs, create connections among recipients, healthcare coalitions, and healthcare coalition members, and allow the healthcare delivery system to continue to provide care during a disaster or public health emergency to improve patient outcomes and also to save lives. So we've drafted potentially nine draft core functions, and they are assessment and risk mitigation to anticipate the challenges and support decision making that meets community specific healthcare needs during a disaster or emergency, collecting and sharing real time information for multidirectional situational awareness, obtaining necessary expertise to support disaster and incident management for specialty care planning and coordination, coordinating and supporting the implementation of response plans, policies, and procedures to address patient care needs, equipping, protecting, and supporting the healthcare workforce, facilitating resource management and planning to mitigate shortfalls, maintain continuity of operations, and sustain delivery of patient care services during an emergency, conducting trainings, exercise, and evaluations to assess, validate, and improve readiness and response, facilitating and supporting development of processes and systems that strengthen and improve upon the healthcare delivery system in readiness, response, and recovery, and finally, creating and implementing strategies to sustain and grow your organization and its partnerships. So I know I went through those very, very quickly. So we're going to go to continue moving to the next slide, because I know that we are kind of a little bit short on time here. But looking at NOFO activities, we are developing activities informed by extensive review of feedback collected to date and partner engagement. And among the refinements that we are considering, we wanted to highlight four topics that warrant emphasis, we believe, in the upcoming project period. Please keep in mind that this is not an exhaustive list and that these represent only a few of the topics we are considering for inclusion. We're looking at extended downtime readiness, including cybersecurity and other potential threats, as we consider preparedness and resilience in an evolving threat landscape. Telehealth, acknowledging resources to improve availability of care during emergency response. Programmatic coordination to streamline activities and identify relevant connection points between the healthcare readiness programs and activities, and patient movement, addressing readiness for medical surge and patient load balancing during response. The NOFO activities will enhance jurisdiction level preparedness, response, and recovery efforts, and advance the NOFO outcomes, which I've already mentioned, the draft outcomes. So we're looking forward to sharing more of the process, more of this information as it unfolds. So next slide, please. So we're going to pause for a moment to take a few questions before we move on to our next section. And then, of course, we will still have some time at the end to respond to any questions that you may have. So I'm going to look here in the chat. Let's see. Okay, so could you repeat, did you say that we will be submitting the HPP BP1 applications and grant solutions? Oh, I'm sorry. It'll probably be grants.gov. Forgive me, I misspoke. It'll be grants.gov is where you'll be submitting your budget period one applications. Next question was, has the recipient level direct cost percentage been determined? No, we have not determined the recipient level direct cost percentage yet, because we are still in the process of looking, reviewing and redefining our recipient level direct cost definition. But if we do have, I mean, whatever the recipient level direct cost percentage is based upon the revised or updated definition, which will take into consideration the healthcare coalition support or coordination activities that are performed by the state. Because we know in the past that our definition has not taken into account the work that the state does in order to support the healthcare coalitions. So, but if based upon what that percentage is, as I said, we haven't said it yet, there still will be a process that you can request an exemption from that. So more information will be forthcoming regarding that. With a later release of the notice of funding opportunity, will the notice of award be available prior to the July 1st start date? We still plan to have the awards made before the July 1st start date. Unfortunately, I can't tell you exactly the date for that. We'll be working very closely with our ASPR grants management. Question here about, can you describe the relationship between the original capabilities, the aspirational goal capabilities we're waiting for, and the core functions? You know, everything that we do, we're talking about our activities, our core functions, is still going to be steeped into what we consider our evidence base, our capabilities, and the other reference documents that we will be using as kind of our source documents to inform everything that we do. As we said, the healthcare preparedness and response capabilities for healthcare coalitions, and that was the old name, previously known as the 2017 through 2022 capabilities. Those are still current capabilities. They're not going away. They're not expiring. They still exist and are considered to be the foundational document for healthcare coalitions. This next set of next set of capabilities, as you know, are going to be focused more so on the entire continuum of healthcare. They will, so our core functions, our activities will tie back to, but they will not be matched one-to-one or pulled directly from any set of either of the capabilities. And I'm going to look at a couple more questions here, but then I'm going to pause so that we'll have time for our next set of speakers here. Let's see. Okay. I'm going to pause here and go to our final speakers. And then we are capturing, just so you know, we are capturing all of your questions, and we will make sure that we have responses for you. But I'm now going to pass it over to our final presenters, Dr. Cullen Clark and Dr. Brent Kasny, to provide an update on the respiratory season of 2023 through 2024. So with that, I'll pass it over to Drs. Clark and Kasny.
Thank you, Jennifer, for the introduction. My name is Brent Kasny. I'm the principal investigator for the Gulf 7 Pediatric Disaster Network, and I'm joined with Colin Clark, who works with Region 5 for Kids, one of the other pediatric disaster care centers of excellence. We're hoping to give just a high-level view of what's going on with this respiratory season with a lens of what the pediatric disaster care centers of excellence have been doing to improve pediatric care during these prolonged surge events, and also provide some lessons learned from the 2022 to 2023 winter respiratory surge, along with some resources that may be of benefit to folks on the call. Next slide, please. So just for some background, there are currently three pediatric disaster care centers of excellence. The first two funded by the Administration for Strategic Preparedness and Response were awarded in 2019. Those are RAPM and Region 5 for Kids. RAPM is on the West Coast, anchored at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital, and includes a large swath of the West Coast, while Region 5 for Kids is anchored at UH Rainbow Babies and Children's and includes Region 5. The newest, my own center, was awarded in 2022. It's the Gulf 7 Pediatric Disaster Network, anchored here at Texas Children's Hospital, and includes Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, and Puerto Rico, as well as Texas. And really the goal of these is to bring together not just children's hospitals, but all entities engaged in the continuum of care throughout a disaster response and improve pediatric best practices related to disaster preparedness and response. Next slide, please. So what do we do? And it's really all across the board. We really try to touch all of this space, from surge planning to legal issues that may be potential barriers during disaster care. Added focuses more recently on mental health during the current mental health crisis that we're faced with, as well as work in the space of deployable teams and partnering, of course, with all our healthcare coalitions along the way.
It's okay. One question. Okay. Come on. So I have the Han, or I have.
I'm sorry. We have a hot mic. Yep. Thank you.
Go right ahead. Please. But we do not do this in a silo. As you can see on this map, there are a number of federally funded entities through either HRSA or the ASPR. And this map, I think, shows a nice high-level view of those working in the pediatric disaster space. You can see the region of RAPM on the West Coast, Region 5 in the Midwest, and G7 in the Southeast. But this map also overlays the 10 hub sites of the Pediatric Pandemic Network, which we partner closely with, as well as, if you're looking at those blue dots, those are the sites for the EMS for Children Innovation and Improvement Center. And the yellow triangles are the RDHRSs, which we also partner with to provide pediatric expertise. Next slide. I'm now going to pass it over to Dr. Colin Clark, who's going to review some of the data from this year's respiratory season.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Kasny. I just wanted to give a broad overview of the respiratory season. So this is a graph looking at the number of RSV detections in children for both the 2022 to 2023 respiratory season and then this year's respiratory season. As you can see, it's the we're seeing the expected uptrend in RSV during our normal winter respiratory season. And what people are as affected as last year, we're still seeing more disease and higher numbers of hospitalization of children under four, as represented by the next graph, if you can move to the next slide. So you can see, obviously, that big green spike was our triple-demic season of 2022 to 2023. And then this year, we're seeing a smaller spike from 2023 to 2024. But then when you compare to the sort of pre-pandemic years, we're still seeing a general upward trend. And so the good news is you can tell from both graphs that the number of RSV infections and hospitalizations are on a downslope. Next slide, please. Influenza is another story. Nationally, we saw a peak shortly after the holidays. There was a downtrend from that holiday peak, but we're actually starting to see another uptrend. If you go to the next slide, this is looking at particularly our region, Region 5. You can start to see another sort of uptrend here in the flu-like illnesses. And you can go to the next slide. And then using, this is a situational awareness dashboard that has been made by the Region 5 group. And just looking at the sort of trends along the lines for all the different, all the most common respiratory illnesses we see, you can see that each region is starting to see an increase in influenza B, which is the main pathogen behind this this more recent uptrend. Next slide, please. And I'll hand it back to Dr. Kasny to talk about Texas Children's.
And this is just a little bit more granular data at one of our sites. So this is respiratory viral trends from this winter at Texas Children's. And what you can see is, and Texas tends to lead the way as much most of the Southeast in some of these cases related to viral spread. You can see that we've really peaked and tapered off with regards to RSV specifically, with a peak around the beginning to middle of November, but then tapering off quite nicely. And what you see following upon that is a surge in flu A and flu B, also downtrending with a slight uptick in COVID more recently. I think when comparing the two seasons, what you see is not this confluence of all three simultaneously, but more of an isolated RSV, then flu, and now COVID, but not really leading to significant increase in hospitalizations. And I'll pass it back to Dr. Clark for the next slide.
And so, 2022 to 2023 was a really difficult time for a lot of the pediatric institutions. And I know a lot of the adult institutions is that we were overrun with very sick patients. And so we really took a lot of reflection to sort of see the things that we could learn and how we could improve our response to the following years. And so this is really just a list of some of the key concepts and key kind of areas that we wanted to focus on with the resources we created for not just pediatric hospitals, but also adult facilities as well. I won't go through the entire list in the observance of time. And more importantly, that I think a lot of the resources we're going to share with you guys here today address a lot of these issues that we identified during the last respiratory season. Next slide, please.
And G7 similarly conducted an after-action report based on the, our situation in response to the 2022 to 2023 season. And again, really what we took a different approach from Region 5 for Kids and did a survey of our member institutions and noted some things in particular related to infection prevention, recognizing that every healthcare encounter should be an encounter or opportunity to vaccinate. Obviously, there were issues with staffing, but saw that telehealth proved very significant in our ability to handle some of this surge. Next slide, please. And this, again, is somewhat difficult to read, but I know we're sharing these slides. This is the results of that survey, looking at kind of what the most common challenges or barriers are. You can see that inadequate staffing and increased ED volume would decrease inpatient capacity were the leaders for challenges and barriers. And really, solutions and successes were across the board. They were very diverse, with each facility having unique strategies and solutions to these problems. Next slide, please.
All right. And so I just wanted to briefly go over the resources from the Pediatric Centers of Excellence that have been released either in the past year or for this respiratory season. You can go to the next slide. Region 5 for Kids has put together a situational awareness dashboard that allows us to look at trends on a weekly basis from the pediatric hospitals within our region. It allows us to better understand and forecast the needs in the region. This is not openly available outside of the participants in the report yet, but our hope is this is a sort of pilot or trial so that we can hopefully one day create something that allows for more situational awareness throughout the region or the nation. Next slide, please. This is a look at our bed availability dashboard through EM Resource. This was recently adopted in Ohio. I believe Wisconsin and Michigan have had this for a long time. It's been very helpful for patient movement and situational awareness in the state. In our particular region, a lot of the hospitals are very close to, a lot of the pediatric hospitals are very close to state borders. So the next goal is to work with our state partners to push for information sharing across states, which I think could really improve our capacity and capability in terms of patient load leveling in the case of a major outbreak like last year. Next slide, please. We also focused a lot on telehealth assistance. You know, providers in children's hospitals had to improvise since 2022, given the limited availability of inpatient pediatric beds. We were providing a lot of telehealth for the management of hospitals, for the management at outside hospitals while they were awaiting inpatient beds and transfers. Our telehealth work group has been exploring innovative means of improving the efficacy of these telehealth consultations with concepts such as video consultations and transferable images, including real-time bedside ultrasound. Next slide, please. And then finally, I wanted to share with you guys a lot of the resources that our Centers of Excellence have put together. We can share these links and QR codes. These are all available through the PPN website, the EIIC, the EMS for Children Innovation and Improvement Center, or the various Center of Excellence websites. This particular manual, the Winter Viral Surge Preparedness Manual, is really just a short list of strategies to prepare non-pediatric facilities for pediatric surges. Next slide. Our colleagues in RAPM have created a very robust surge planning strategy playbook that I encourage you guys to look through. It is, when I say robust, it is 70 pages, but it is just it really covers everything you could ever want to know about how to respond to a surge and prepare for one. Next slide. The three centers of excellence in collaboration with the PPN and EIIC have also put together resources for pediatric care. I think this is a really fantastic master list of resources for emergency pediatric care and disaster and everyday emergencies. I encourage everybody to look at it and share it with your partners. Next slide. Region 5 for Kids had created a facility preparedness tool, which is a comprehensive list of materials, processes, and amenities necessary to optimize pediatric preparedness at any facility, but mostly those general facilities that don't see exclusively pediatrics. Next slide. And then finally, there's also the Pediatric Hazard Vulnerability Analysis and Metrics Scorecard. I'm sure everyone's familiar with the concept of the HVA, but a team from Region 5 created a hazard vulnerability analysis template that addresses specific pediatric considerations. This is available online for your reference, and we encourage everyone to share it with emergency managers to really include that pediatric perspective when it comes to emergency preparedness. And next slide. And this is our final slide, just to show you guys the concept of the pediatric medical operations coordination cells. It's built along the same sort of idea as the medical operations coordination cells that we saw used during COVID. This is a process that we continue to exercise and spread awareness to create a highly effective deployable asset in the case of pediatric disasters. So it's we have ongoing works as well as these resources, which we will continue to provide to our partners to better pediatric care in the case of an expected winter respiratory surge, because as soon as this surge ends, we start planning for next year's. So that is all the slides we have, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
And again, if you're not thinking of any questions right now, you can see our contact information available here on the slide. Feel free to email us. In addition, if you find yourself in either of the regions that we represent, Region 5 for Kids or the Gulf 7 Pediatric Disaster Network, we love to make connections and continue to network and grow our networks. So feel free to reach out, as we'd love to partner with anybody on the call. All right, seeing no questions, I will hand it back to Jennifer. Thank you very much, guys.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Kasney and Dr. Clark, for really a very thorough and comprehensive overview. You know, I think with the response to all of the resources you shared is just really kind of wow, wow, wow. I know for the program to be relatively young as compared to the hospital preparedness program, and then also, you know, it's somewhat of a sister program to our regional disaster health response system. You know, just really want to give you guys kudos for all of the incredible work for all of these centers, for all of the resources that you have developed and for the information, and certainly really appreciate you coming on today's call and sharing this. And for all of our attendees, we will be sharing the slides, so that way you will be able to scan those QR codes and to be able to access those incredible resources that have been provided. And then, as I stated, their contact information is located here. I tried to answer most of the questions that were in the chat. I know we're a little bit over time, and for any questions that we did not get to, we will certainly be able to, plan to provide you with written responses. We don't have all the answers right now, especially related to the notice of funding opportunity, because we are really in the thick of making sure that we are trying to get through it all, get it down on paper, and to take a posture that is less prescriptive and providing more flexibility to all of you. So I would certainly request your patience, and I know that you're very anxious to see the notice of funding opportunity, but we will get it out as soon as possible. And as I said, we are tentatively planning to release that in March. So if we could go to our very last slide, slide 46 would be great. But just want to thank all of our presenters for your time today and for all that you do, for all of our attendees, for your active participation. I know this is our first meeting of the year. Want to thank you for attending. Have great turnout, great questions, as well. But just thank you for what you do on a daily basis. As a reminder, we invite you to share any stories regarding how you or your healthcare coalitions or your healthcare coalition members are using ASPR funding to make a positive impact on your communities. If you have a story to share, please fill out our Stories from the Field submission form or reach out to your field project officer for more information. And a member of our team will drop the Story from the Field submission form link in the chat for easy reference. We look forward to hearing about the great work that you are doing. If you have any comments or anything about any of the information that we provided today, please contact us. As you know, we have our resource mailbox that we maintain, our HPP at hhs.gov. Again, that's HPP at hhs.gov, as in Victor. If you have any questions, I know it was just a quick flash of information that we shared, quite a bit of information we shared as well with you, but certainly want to get your feedback. And this is not the only opportunity that you will have to provide us with feedback. But again, want to thank you for sticking with us for a little bit over time. But thank you again for attending today. And we hope that everyone has a great day. And as we said at the start of the call, happy Valentine's Day as well. So thank you, everyone, for joining.